This is Walter Cannon, and this is Monitor, midway through the seventh hour. Yet to come, a Monitor report from Mid-Atlantic, a visit with Walter McGraw in San Quentin, a visit with Henry Morgan, currently out of San Quentin. And now that other Morgan, Morgan Beatty, with headlines.
Yes, and the first one is quite serious, Walter. Bulletin, Montevideo, Uruguay. United Press reports rival mobs are roaming the streets of Buenos Aires tonight. Notice they're not reporting that from Buenos Aires, Montevideo. Reports reaching Montevideo make it appear that President Juan de Perón's campaign against the Catholic Church might explode into large-scale violence. Tonight's trouble started when some 500 persons, apparently inflamed by Peronist charges of treason against the church, shot at and stoned the residents of Santiago Cardinal Copello in the center of the city. Four persons were injured in this mobbing or rioting in Buenos Aires. Shots were heard in the Argentine capital for several hours. Police finally broke up one disturbance with tear gas, but a partial news blackout imposed by the Perón government still has not been lifted. Monitor's correspondent at Buenos Aires, Bob Lindley, has not been permitted to make his scheduled report for this evening. Here at home, the year's first big strike in the automobile industry is scheduled to begin in just 90 minutes, but indications are that an 11th-hour agreement will be reached between General Motors and CIO United Auto Workers, same pattern as the Ford agreement. The final death toll in yesterday's tragic automobile crash at Le Mans, France, has now been placed at 77, down from 85, thank goodness. However, doctors say that at least six of the injured may not live. The accident was caused by a burning sports car that hurtled into a crowd of spectators at the Le Mans International Racetrack. More news and a complete rundown on the Major League Baseball scores over most of these stations on the hour. But first, Monitor takes you by transcription to Washington, D.C. for the American Forum of the Air. Tonight's subject, should we revise our immigration laws? The participants, Senator Paul H. Douglas of Illinois and Congressman Francis E. Walter, Pennsylvania. Now, Monitor to Washington and guest moderator Stephen McCormick.
Hello, welcome once again to the American Forum. I'd like you to meet our guest today, Senator Paul H. Douglas, Democrat of Illinois, and Representative Francis E. Walter, Democrat of Pennsylvania, co-author of the Walter McCarran Act. There is violent disagreement in Congress on our immigration policy as envisioned by some 60 bills introduced in this session by both Democrats and Republicans to amend the controversial Walter McCarran Act. Equally a target is the Refugee Relief Act. President Eisenhower has urged a number of changes in this law, and Adlai Stevenson calls it a misguided policy which requires quick revision. Equally strong is the defense of these acts by prominent men who are experts in the subject. Our guests today, Senator Douglas, Congressman Walter, appeared on the American Forum over 2 years ago to argue this subject of immigration. Now the topic is again at the boiling point at Capitol Hill. Well, Congressman Walter, since the president just appointed a new man, Pierce Garrity, to handle the refugee relief program with orders to make it succeed, do you feel that the job can be done with no changes in the laws that now exist?
I have always felt that way. There are several factors, of course, that made the program get off to a slow start, principal of which was the need to set up machinery. Now, the machinery has been set up, and the program will succeed insofar as there is a demand for it. And by that I mean just this, that recently I returned from a trip to Europe where I was a delegate to the Intergovernmental Committee on Migration Convention. And after the convention, I went to visit various points of entry. And much to my amazement, I found that there were no people interested in coming to the United States. No refugees in Germany. And as best proof that that is the truth, is the fact that the usual quota to Germany is current. And not one single German refugee number has been applied for.
Well, Senator Douglas, why then all these, if these things be true now, Congressman, Senator Douglas, why all these proposed revisions to the Act?
Well, in the first place, there are still a large number of DP camps in Europe. And most of these camps are full. Some of them have been closed down, but I have seen letters from relief workers whom I believe to be responsible, describing the large number of refugees from behind the Iron Curtain and from other portions of Europe who want to come here and cannot get here. And, of course, it is also true that behind the Iron Curtain, the flight into the West has slowed down because people know that if they do get over the border, there's almost no prospect of getting a visa with any speed and getting over here, so that the breakdown of the program has deterred the refugees. Now, I would like to develop this point, if I may. When the Act was passed, it was intended that we should take in 190,000 refugees and orphans and 19,000 relatives by the 1st of January, 1957, or in about 3.5 years. The Act has now been in effect for about half of this time. We have only taken in 3,800 refugees and about a little over 18,000 relatives. Or in other words, we've taken in only 2% of the refugees that we originally intended to take in, despite the fact that half the time has gone by.
Would this indicate that there's something wrong with the administration of the Act?
I think there's something wrong with the administration, but I think there's also something wrong with the Act, and I want to bring this out right off. I think the chief defect in the Act, and it's been intensified by the administration, is the requirement that a refugee can only be brought over here under individual sponsorship and individual assurances, and not by group sponsorship and group assurances by reliable voluntary organizations, as was the case under the Displaced Persons Act. I'd like to throw that out, develop it for a minute, and then see what Congressman Walter thinks about it. At present, in order to bring a refugee here, an individual man has to sign a long document of about 8 pages answering the questions, in which he guarantees to give to a specific refugee a specific job at given rates of wages, which will not displace any American, and have him housed in a given room at a given address in a given place, in a given address at a given place. Now, these are very difficult things to do, and he also has to submit his record of his average bank accounts, which has to be attested by the banker. His employer has to make out an affidavit saying what his earnings and so forth are, so that the red tape is such that in practice they've only had 40,000 individual sponsorships offered, and only 35,000 of these have been accepted. The result is that there is virtually no pipeline left. They've killed off the demands in this country. Whereas under the Displaced Persons Act and under President Truman, the sponsorship and the assurances could be given by the great voluntary organizations, such as the National Catholic Welfare Council, the Protestant churches, the Lutheran Church, the Jewish organizations, and so on. And they brought in 87% of the 400,000 refugees. I think we should have these group assurances. And that, I would say, is the biggest defect in the Act, and I'd be very much interested in what Congressman Walter thinks about
Congressman
that.
Walter, sir, your opinions on these group reassurances.
Well, of course, there were so many very disappointing experiences during the period of the Displaced Persons Law that the demand was made when this law was considered that something be done in order to endeavor to keep people where they had agreed to go. For example, farmers, and I know of thousands of instances, relied on displaced persons to assist them in their farm work. They went to the farms and remained a few days. Under our Constitution, of course, it's impossible to keep a person in a particular place or on a particular job. So these people left the farmer in a lurch. I know of cases in Louisiana, for example, where they always relied on Puerto Rican labor. Well, they endeavored, in order to help with this program, they endeavored to bring in a number of displaced persons. Well, within weeks, all of the people who had gone there, and all of them is what I mean, were either in Milwaukee or Detroit or in your city of Chicago. Leaving the southern planter without any help, and of course it was a very serious problem to him. Now, as far as blanket assurances are concerned, I don't know how you could prevail upon these voluntary agencies to furnish them, because during the hearings that have been held. And I say that because the charges have been made that I wouldn't even permit hearings to be held. Well, we've already had hearings on the proposed amendments to the bill. The voluntary agencies represented that they did not want to furnish blanket assurances. I don't know how we could make them. But, Senator, there is something basic about this whole thing that people overlook. In Europe, conditions are good, thanks to the expenditure of about 38 billions of the American taxpayers' dollars. Europe, in the free part of Europe, is enjoying unheard-of prosperity. Secondly, the people who have been behind the Iron Curtain and are in the German economy now have found satisfactory employment. They've been absorbed in the economy. They don't want to leave Europe because they think that there's coming a day very shortly when they will be able to return to their own homes. And there, as I said before, is full employment. Now, you just compare that situation with the situation that existed at the time the displaced persons law was enacted. 10 million of displaced persons in Europe, 8 million of which were settled, 1 million absorbed in the economy, and 1 million were taken care of under the displaced persons law.
Congressman, could I interrupt you?
No, I just want to say one thing more. We took a large percentage of those people, more than our fair share, but that was because of the appeal that was made to the American people. And in addition to that, we spent upwards of $100 million in assisting in the resettlement in Israel and in Australia and Canada and in South America.
You mentioned hearings in the Hill. I had this question, gentlemen, because Mr. Garrity's predecessor, Edward Corsi, has been reported in the press as saying that Congress is set, quote, to give President Eisenhower the works, end quote, in his attempt to liberalize the Refugee Relief Act. Is there such a feeling on the Hill?
Of course there isn't, and I don't know exactly what Mr. Corsi meant when he said that. Of course, I never understand what
Senator,
he means.
Senator Douglas.
Well, I may say that a group of us, Senator Lehman and Senator Humphrey Kefauver and myself, introduced a bill to make the changes in the Refugee Relief Act approximately 5 weeks before President Eisenhower took action. And I want to return, if I may, to this question of group sponsorship. I think the experience under the Displaced Persons Act was very good. We brought in 400,000 people in 4 years. I've checked up very closely on them in Chicago. Very few of them have gotten into trouble. I know of the 54,000 German ethnic refugees that we brought in under an amendment which I sponsored, that none have been deported, none have become public charges, very few have had any police difficulties.
May I interrupt you just at that point?
Congressman,
yes.
Walter.
I'd like to point out the reason for that, Senator. When Berlin was captured, our troops fortunately took that part of the city in which was located the Berlin Document Center, so that there was a means of determining who each of those people was. That's not the fact today.
These were the refugees who had come from southeastern Europe, the Germans who had come in.
That's right.
Well, may I also point out that when I last checked up on the record of the 400,000 DPs, none of them had been deported for subversive activity. I think on the whole they were absorbed into American life very well, and that while it is true some left agriculture for industry, by and large it was a success. Now the churches have their members scattered all over the country. The churches want to help in this. They can get pledges from their members, and they are reliable groups and reliable bodies. And they are ready to say, as the refugees are listed as Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Greek Orthodox, or whatnot, Lutheran, they are ready to say, we will take this one and that one, and then they can distribute them to their churches and to their members. And this is the point why the system is breaking down. They've issued 32,000 visas, 22,000 having come into the country, but there are only been 35,000 approved individual assurances. So they've only got 3,000 individual assurances to travel on.
Could we,
we've got to build up the number of those assurances, and the red tape is so great for individuals to do it, that you've got to permit reputable groups to do it.
Could we go to another phase of this, gentlemen?
In just a moment, I want to say this about the assurances from church groups. Senator, the reason why there are so few assurances is because there are not many people willing to give an assurance.
Oh, I think people are ready to give the assurance, but they're tired out by the red tape. And this requirement that they must pledge a specific job not now occupied by an American at a given wage and must guarantee housing not now occupied, plus all the documents that they have to fill out, that discourages people.
Do you feel you'll be able to get that through the Senate, Senator?
Well, I think if the issue is carried to the American people, that it'll go through the Senate, because senators, like the American people, are humane.
Well, Congressman Walter, how do you feel
I don't like the inference that those who oppose the law are not humane.
I'm
humane to this extent that I certainly pity nations in which there's unemployment, but I'm not ready to relieve it at the expense of the employment of Americans. And that was the reason for the job provision in the law. And as to the housing, you must bear this fact in mind, Senator, that at the time the act was written, there was a shortage of housing in those areas in which these people normally and usually go. And that's why we wrote that section in the law, because we just didn't want Americans deprived of housing in order to provide it for somebody who's not
here. Well, there's still a considerable amount of unemployment, but it's largely confined to coal mining and textile centers, and there has been this pickup, which we hope will continue, so that I don't think that's a problem now.
Let's go over to this question of security, gentlemen. That seems to be a big one in which everyone has a great interest. Has overemphasis on security tended to negate the basic reasons for this Refugee Act?
Well, let me say that we all want security, and we don't want people brought in who will be communist agents. Certainly not. But I would like to point out that the DP Commission dealt with this very effectively. It weeded these people out. I have every confidence that the security which they have now built up is sufficient, so that it's not necessary, it would seem to me, to require a 2 years record. And I want to go into this question of a 2 years record. How can a person come from behind the Iron Curtain and then have documents to prove that for 2 years he's been an anti-communist?
Congressman Walter, maybe you'd want to comment on that.
He can't establish an eligibility record. And it is this factor, amongst others, which is discouraging people from fleeing the Iron Curtain.
Should that be a change we should make in this, Congressman Walter?
Yes, if there's a change, it should be changed from 2 to 5 years.
2 to 5 years?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Well, because of the day I spent in Berlin with the head of the counterintelligence agency. He stated to me that he understood an attempt was going to be made to change this 2-year provision. And he said, Congressman, if it's changed, insist on it being 5 years, because we are never quite sure that even with this 2-year check, a lot of people who have been planted, and we know they've been planted, have not been cleared as security risks. Now, I've heard all of this talk about the interminable delay. So I sat down with the people who work on this particular program and who are specialists. And it was interesting to me to learn that it takes 57 days under this procedure to work out a clearance, which is something more than a month, less than the time required for security clearance in our own government in the United States.
Senator, does that answer your problem?
Well, I would say this, that I think we have good security and counterintelligence agents over there, just as the DP Commission had, and that they can follow these people up pretty accurately. And I'd like to say this, that the main source of Soviet espionage in this country does not, from outside, does not come so much from Europe as through Mexico. It's the Texas and south western border is wide open. And the wetbacks are pouring over, illegal wetbacks are pouring over the border by hundreds of thousands. We have every reason to believe there are large numbers of Soviet agents amongst them.
They were up to about 3 months ago, but since General Swing has been made Commissioner of Immigration, you will find that the wetbacks that are coming over now are very few, Senator.
Well, it may be. I know that some of us in the Senate have been hammering at this issue for years, trying to get better control of illegal immigration over the Mexican border.
One suggestion has been that teachers, scientists, and others invited over to this country by colleges and other institutions be allowed to enter without quota restrictions. Is this a sound proposal?
Well, that's the basic law. I've heard charges made that people from behind the Iron Curtain couldn't come here to some scientific meetings at various universities. That's absolutely untrue. In the basic code, there's written a provision, and the provisions of the basic code apply in the Refugee Relief Act. There's a provision which authorizes the Secretary of State to issue a visa to anybody where there's a determination that the admission of that person is not contrary to the national interest. And we've seen it all the way from the Greek beauty queen to the communist chess players and people of all sorts come in here on that special provision of the law.
With a few minutes left, let's go to that basic law, the law of which you are co-author, Congressman Walter. Do you feel it should, now that it's been in existence for a couple of years, do you feel it should leave it the way it is, or should there be change?
No, there should be changes. I made that discovery quite a while ago, my feeling was confirmed this week at a hearing that my committee has been holding on the question of the failure to deport a lot of dangerous criminals. And we found one racketeer, for example, against whom a deportation order issued in 1936. He hasn't been deported yet. And we find that these people, if they have enough money, and most of them have, and incidentally, these are the people whose names were mentioned in the Kefauver investigation. We have gone over 14 cases thus far. Aliens, mind you. These are aliens who've been convicted of everything from racketeering to murder, still walking the streets. And we also made a very interesting discovery that they move into places where the court calendar is congested. And there they seek to have the deportation stayed. And it seems to me that that indicates that the Walter McCarran law should be amended so as to compel these people to apply for stays of deportation where they live.
Senator Douglas.
Well, that may well be true, but I would say that the chief difficulty in the McCarran Act, and I like to think of it as the McCarran Act rather than the McCarran-Walter Act.
No, the McCarran Act was never reported out by the committee.
Well, the chief defect in the Act, then, I would say is this, that it freezes the 1924 system of quotas under which we grant to each nationality group 1/6 of 1% of the number supposedly forming the population, the white population, in 1920. Now, this means that Great Britain has a quota of 65,000, Ireland has a quota of some 17,000. But in practice, only about a third of the British quota is taken, and only about half of the Irish quota, so that you have well over 50,000 not taken from the British and Irish quotas. Now, those perish. Those cannot be transferred under the Act. On the other hand, Greece has only 300 under the Basic Act. Italy has only 5,000. Poland has 6,000. The Baltic states have about 800 between them. Now, I think these unused quotas ought to be pooled and distributed on a different basis, distributed according to those who have relatives here, according to special skills, according to whether they have been the victims of persecution, whether they're refugees, and whether they have special gifts which would be applicable and helpful in the United States.
Does that sound reasonable to you, Congressman Walter?
Well, of course it does, because that's the law.
There's no pooling of quotas.
There's no pooling of quotas, but insofar as the relatives and the skilled specialists are concerned, they are given the top priority.
Within a very small total.
Yes, but now, Senator, let's look at this from a practical standpoint. Incidentally, it's very interesting to me when I hear all of this criticism of the method of selecting people, which I like to say must be done by mathematicians and not politicians. The people who've been criticizing were strangely silent ever since that was the law of the land. I never heard any criticism of the quota system until we started writing the report on the bill. And we considered this at great length. Bear this in mind, it took us 5 years to prepare this law. And the question arose, what would you do with the unused quotas? Would you give them only to those nations who were our allies during the recent war? Would you give them, would you permit one man to have discretionary authority? How would you do it? I can understand the pressures that would be brought to bear because we saw something of the sort during the time the displaced persons law was in effect. And unless there is a formula, then, Senator, we're in for a lot of trouble because I know
you'd have to use judgment, but people can use judgment, you know.
You feel a formula is feasible?
Well, I think you can have a simple formula that one quarter of the unused quotas to be distributed to those who have relatives, one quarter to those who have special skills, one quarter of those who have been persecuted, one quarter, let us say, to those who would be of special advantage to the United States, and then have a board of appeals in case there is a question about individual cases. Seems to me that that's not too difficult to do with 55,000. As a matter of fact, it's what we have to do with the refugees now. They have to be appraised individually. And it's this defect, in the basic defect in the McCarran-Walter Act, which really caused the enactment of the Refugee Relief Act in order to give protection to Greece and Italy and Holland and so forth that were really ruled out under the McCarran.
Is that a general feeling on the Hill?
Why was it called a Refugee Relief Act if the real reason for the act was to change a situation that was created by the Basic Code? Why didn't we honestly attempt to amend the Basic Code?
Well, I would have preferred to do that myself.
That's what I wanted to do, Senator. As you know, you and I talked about it at length.
But the administration chose to try to modify the Basic Act by bringing in the refugees and by providing...
No, that was just sugarcoating because of the warm hearts the American people have.
Well,
and
that's
that was
a good
all
quality.
It was, just sugarcoating and nothing else.
And they provided these 19,000 relatives, which by the 1954 amendment, now it's possible, interchangeability of refugees and relatives in Italy, Greece, and Holland is possible to bring in 94,000 of these relatives.
Well, now,
that was my amendment, as you know.
Well, that's a good amendment,
yes.
Let me say. That's
Congressman Walter, do you feel that any of these
I hope
changes...
you'll go on from that, Francis, and have a general revision of the whole act.
Well,
you
if
feel
you will look
at
my...
such a splendid record in Congress that I hate to see you holding out against these changes.
And how long will you hold out, Congressman Walter, or do you feel that this
He's
will go on indefinitely?
He's made a splendid record in Congress.
Well, thank you, Senator.
I mean
But I think one of the things that I'm proudest of is my record in this field of immigration, because
I'm
I
sorry,
feel
I
that
I'm...
I'm
sorry, I must interrupt, sir.
Honest,
sir, terribly sorry that our time is up for today. And our thanks have been... Our thanks to you, gentlemen, Senator Paul Douglas, Democrat of Illinois, Representative Francis Walter. The nation's first discussion program, the American Forum, is now in its 27th year, founded and produced by Theodore Granick. This is Steve McCormick bidding you goodbye.
1 week from today, the American Forum will again present two nationally known speakers discussing an issue vital to you and your country. For reprints of today's discussion on the American Forum, send 10 cents to Ransdell Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington, 18, D.C. That's Ransdell Incorporated, Printers and Publishers, Washington, 18, D.C. America's oldest unrehearsed discussion program is dedicated to the public debate of all sides of all issues vital to you and your country. The American Forum is produced by its founder, Theodore Granick.
You have been listening to the American Forum, the air transcribed from Washington. Tonight's subject, should we revise our immigration laws? Participants, Senator Paul Douglas of Illinois, Congressman Francis E. Walter of Pennsylvania. Eighth hour of Monitor coming up over most of these NBC stations in just 30 seconds.
This is Monitor, NBC's new radio service.